Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 164 of the Spoiler Alert Podcast, brought to you by MovieOutsiders.com. This is Mike, I'm here with Danny, and tonight we're going to be reviewing a currently streaming on Netflix movie called War Machine, which is a comedy war film starring Brad Pitt. Danny, how are you doing?
Great, Mike. I like how you already have struggled to define what this movie is all about.
That's going to be a theme for the next several minutes. Yeah.
All right.
How are you tonight? You doing well?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing great. Thank you.
This is our third direct-to-Netflix film after Beasts of No Nation and The Discovery.
Right.
And we just had the Cannes Film Festival last week. We weren't there.
Somehow, I was just going to say, what do you mean we had that? I would have loved to have been there.
Somehow my invite, I was there, you weren't. Right. So it's like, we were, I gave you the royal we. Anyway, I thought it was interesting because Netflix had a few films in competition again, and that was causing a lot of backlash, especially in the foreign markets where they will skip the theaters and go straight to Netflix, including Okja, which is a new film from the guy who directed Snowpiercer, which we reviewed in episode, who knows?
Wait, that was an early one. Yeah.
140 episodes ago or so. And that film also stars Tilda Swinton, as does War Machine.
She doesn't star in this movie, but she
got like third billing.
I know, she appears for like 3 minutes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the... Just interesting. Can you elaborate at all on the controversy or the ruckus that it's caused at Cannes? Like, what's the hullabaloo when a straight to Netflix streaming movie enters competition on the international film circuit?
Sure. Again, this is similar to the controversy that Netflix has stirred here with respect to domestic film distributors and theater owners, where, you know, War Machine, I think, did play in a few screens, but it must be like two or three screens in New York and LA or something. And the rest of the country just got it on Netflix. So theater owners did not get a chance to distribute this film, to display this film, to make any money off this film. It just skipped them. And again, in Europe, it's the same thing, where here we are at what many Europeans would consider like the classiest film festival for real cinema goers and film lovers. And here is, you know, a film that's skipping the theater altogether and will just debut on your phone, essentially, or in your home. And there are a lot of people still have their nose out of joint about that.
So to summarize, people want a slice of the money pie and they kind of have a stick up their ass about it. Like that's the gist of it, right?
Yeah, I think there's that. And I think there's also a bit of, you know, at Cannes that films can be highbrow and this is art and you're kind of it's almost like you're skipping the way in which the art was meant to be appreciated and moving straight to the crass commercialization of it, if that could be fair.
All right.
I also want to reference our last episode, 163, because we heard from a subscriber this week who validated your insane life choice to have never seen an episode of Law and Order. And the subscriber said they hadn't either.
I wasn't the only one out there.
Agog. I can't believe that there are even two humans in the United States who, A, listen to our podcast, and B, have never seen Law and Order. Like, that Venn diagram must have so little overlap. People who've never seen Law and Order, people listen to our podcast, there's now two in that little overlap.
Let me assure you, Danny, you can rest easy. Since our last podcast, I've watched every episode of Law and Order.
I wish I could believe you. I'd feel better if you had. It's physically impossible.
It's totally not possible that I could have done that. Yeah, right.
No, it's like 20 years worth of episodes.
I think, like, end to end, that would take you several years to finish those.
It'd be a tough one, yeah.
Tonight, we're here to talk about War Machine. Before we get into what we thought of the movie, why don't you give us a quick summary of the plot?
Sure. War Machine is based on the book The Operators by Michael Hastings, and writer-director David Michaud loosely based this movie upon that book, which is the story of the firing of U.S. General Stanley McChrystal. And in the film, Brad Pitt plays four-star General Glenn McMahon, who is sent to Afghanistan to bring the war to a close. He is instructed to tour the country, determine what is needed, and put together a plan to win this thing. And he is told he can have anything he needs except more troops. McMahon meets with the country's new president, who's played by Sir Ben Kingsley, and his team tours around, and he becomes convinced of his ability to win the war in Afghanistan. He eventually allows a Rolling Stone reporter to come with them as he and his team travel around Europe to shore up international support for a troop surge. Rather than winning the conflict, however, McMahon finds himself and his team under fire after an unflattering article appears in Rolling Stone, resulting in his firing and the war continuing. And that's War Machine.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
I really wanted to like this movie, but I just was not able to do so.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think that's fair. I feel the same way, although I don't know that I wanted to like this movie because you probably, when we were deciding what our next few movies are and we talked about doing this movie and you said it was straight to Netflix starring Brad Pitt, gave me at least a couple sentences as to what it was about, but I
always do.
I completely forgot. I had no idea when I hit play that what the movie was about. I didn't know if it was a sci-fi movie. I honestly did not know what War Machine was about. And I'm a little slow, so it took me about 20 minutes into the movie before I thought, this seems a lot like the Stanley McChrystal story. Like, isn't that what we're getting at here? And then it kind of went off the rails for me because I couldn't decide what the movie was trying to be. Is it a satire like Stanley Kubrick of Dr. Strangelove, kind of poking fun at the U.S. military? Or is it a Stanley Kubrick, like, Full Metal Jacket, like, there's rough war scenes in it movie? Or is it, like, or is it, like, an Aaron Sorkin written kind of tough dialogue? I couldn't tell. Like, I just didn't get what it was supposed to be 25 minutes in once I realized that it was loosely based on this. And then I just struggled to really grasp onto anything with it.
I'm 100% in agreement with you, and I think that's the biggest problem of the film is the tone of the piece. I don't think it knew what it wanted to be either. In my notes I wrote, there probably was a very good anti-war film in here, and then someone along the line said, but what if we make it silly?
Yeah.
And then it felt like, I don't even know if they went back and reshot anything. You know, it was like, because nothing.
Try to save it in editing or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so weird. Brad Pitt and his portrayal of General McMahon is so strange. He himself plays it like an alien. Like, I don't understand if his character is supposed to be intelligent or not, a brilliant strategist or not, a great leader or not, a good soldier or not. I don't understand, because there are times where it seems like he is our window into the absurdity of this modern war. And there are other times where it seems like he's wholly oblivious to the fact that the war is unwinnable. And I feel like you can't be both at the same time. Did you struggle? I couldn't keep up at all with that.
I agree with you 100%. I think that, so after watching the movie, I went back and reread the Rolling Stone article. I never read the book. Did you read the book that it's based?
I didn't.
I honestly didn't know that the book existed until after I watched the movie and then read up on it a little bit. But I do remember the article very well. What I can't believe is that it was 7 years ago. That blows my mind. Right. But yeah, there's a 7-year-old Rolling Stone article that precipitated the firing of McChrystal. I went back and reread that, and what I will say is that I can kind of get where the loosely based comes from, because I don't think that Brad Pitt ever plays a true jackass. Like, I think he's very oblivious. You can't always tell if he's smart or kind of dumb, if he's totally oblivious, if he's... Does he love his wife? Well, he's never really doing anything bad to his wife. He's just kind of never there. Like, everything that goes on, he just seems sort of aloof. going back and reading the article on McChrystal, you're kind of like, wow, this guy was an asshole. Like, you don't ascend to that level, I think, and be put in the position that he was put in without, you know, stepping on some throats on your way there. And he doesn't come off well in the article at all. And I don't think that Brad Pitt's character ever comes off like that. But I don't know what he comes off as. He's almost a non-entity.
Right. In fact, even in the article, in the scenes where Scoot McNairy plays the Rolling Stone writer, it seems like the scenes in which he's getting like the juicy details that ultimately cause McMahon's downfall, McMahon is either not in the room or that's not who he's talking to.
Right.
So if anything, the article in the movie you would think is more about the sort of cutting loose behavior of McMahon's entourage, and McMahon's this scoop of vanilla who's kind of just standing in the corner, not the wild jerk partier that maybe McChrystal was. I really felt like his character, did you ever watch the show? And I hate to ask this because you're going to say no because you never see shows, but did you ever watch Arrested Development?
No, never seen that show.
Okay, well, for all of our subscribers who are humans and saw it, it's a great show. It's very, very funny. For the first three seasons, Jason Bateman plays the straight man in the family, in the Bluth family. Everybody else is insane. Everybody else is this crazy, absolute bonkers, gonzo, totally outside, flamboyant character. Everybody except him, who is the absolute perfect straight man. Then in season four, which was direct to Netflix, Netflix revived the show. They also made Michael Bluth, played by Jason Bateman, a crazy person. So like now his character is really wacky and zany, and it's like it just doesn't work at all. And I felt like that with Brad Pitt's character, where it's like, if he's our window into the absurdity of war and what is going on around him, then he's got to be centered and has to be aware of it and help us see that. And instead, it seemed like he was just as. But there were times where he was, and there were times where he wasn't. And
right.
I was getting really hung up on that. And of course, what the number one thing I liked about this movie is it kept making me think of Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
And that is such a fantastic film. And it's far superior to this piece. And it kind of felt like if that's what they were going for, they really could have. I mean, there's a lot of great material in here. And
unfortunately,
in a 16-year war, there's a lot of material. And they just didn't take advantage of any of it.
Yeah, I mean, but Strangelove is full-on satirical, right? I mean, that's the...
Right.
There's no fighting. This is the war room. But this, like, right. there's moments of that, and there's glimpses that are laugh-out-loud funny of the ineptitude of the U.S. government. It just comes off as these great moments where, yes, it's a business like any other business. It's an organization like any other organization. There are total balls dropped, like, absolute... complete IT debacles. Like this happens all the time in every organization. And so it's just funny when you see it at that level. There are these moments, but they're so intercut with other moments that are jarringly different. There's the very serious moments. There's some Aaron Sorkin-esque dialogue between him and the director of the, it's not the Secretary of State, but somebody in the State Department.
Alan Ruck's character?
You know, that he'd ended a previous conversation saying there's going to be no parades after this. And then he clarifies by saying that was a glib, asshole way to end that conversation. There are absolutely going to be parades after this. There's going to be tons of parades after this. It's just that none of them will be for you. And then he clarifies by saying, that was also a glib way of ending the conversation, but this time it's true. Like, I mean, that could have come off the pen of Aaron Sorkin, right? That was a total cut to the jugular kind of moment. But then it seems out of place amongst the satire and joking. And that comes not long after a straight-on platoon sequence that was really intense.
It was a harrowing... Yeah, the siege scene where they're taking the town. I mean, it was straight out of Zero Dark Thirty or something. I mean, it was intense. I was on the edge of my seat. I was nervous the whole time. And it's like, isn't this supposed to be a comedy?
It was a great this movie was like a great collection of scenes that just somehow didn't quite all jive. I don't know.
Now, it's also a really beautiful film. Like, the cinematography is great. The different, like when they're in Europe and the filters, everything's gray and blue and dark. And obviously when they're in Afghanistan, it's all washed out and bright and yellow. There's a moment in Germany where McMahon goes to visit a memorial and he's standing alone in this room and there's sort of almost like fog in the room and he's in silhouette and he salutes. I mean, it's like a beautiful shot and you think that has no business being in this movie.
Yeah.
Like it looks too good to be in this movie. Yeah. Yeah. Like it was just, there are really high quality, well-made elements in this movie. Brad Pitt is a very good actor, I think, and doesn't get his credit because he's also a famous movie star. And a lot of people have written that they've really enjoyed this role. I mean, he's getting really rave reviews for this performance, and I just don't see it. I just don't get what he was trying for. I don't get it.
I was wholly distracted by the accent that he uses. I don't know what you thought of that, but I found it really distracting. I mean, yeah. Obviously lots of great actors have used lots of a little bit over the top. I mean, even think of Marlon Brando in The Godfather, right? With the cotton in his mouth. And like, so I get the premise behind it, but like whatever he's doing, was that supposed to be satirical too? That sort of grumbly, like he's always needs a lozenge kind of thing going on. I found it really, really distracting.
And not to pile on there, but like, what's up with his running form? Oh, so his character runs 7 miles every day, and it looks like I don't understand. Like he's ramrod straight, and he's bow-legged, and his arms flop around.
Like, I mean, I know he's got his hands kind of gripped in sort of like a frozen claw sort of thing going on that they'd alluded to. The narrator had in the movie, which is potentially a battle injury at some point. I couldn't quite remember what the history of it was, but yeah, he ran really weird, really odd. And there's several scenes of it.
So weird that it's distracting. And so weird that it's like, if you're going to include someone running or doing anything, you can't make it like something from the Ministry of Funny Walks from Monty Python.
Right.
And then just move on. You know, like it's just too weird. And it's either, you know, it's clearly a deliberate choice that he and the director made. And at some point you have to say, what was the value of making that choice?
I'm 100% certain Brad Pitt doesn't actually run that way. I definitely think that was a choice that they made. So I guess the thing that I loved the most were the moments of dialogue that I really enjoyed. I alluded to one earlier that I compared to Sorkin. I think that there were some hilarious satirical sequences that I also alluded to with just, you know, some really inept metaphors and some, there's one point where I think it's Brad Pitt's character says, I don't want the report coming out about this tomorrow to include the word clusteringly.
Right.
I laughed and laughed and laughed. That was great. There's one point where he goes on just a tirade about somebody expecting an assessment. And it just hit really close to home because that's always the thing that somebody expects of a project management consultant. Like, just come in and do an assessment. And then when you're done with the assessment, put the assessment on my desk. And then we'll assess the assessment. And I thought that was pretty brilliant, too. I think that there are some really great humorous moments. There just weren't enough strung together to, I think, really justify this as a comedy.
For sure. And the one that stuck out for me is after the election in Afghanistan. You know, they're talking about how corrupt it was and how they now need to go to a recall election or a runoff. He's fighting that because he just wants to move forward with his plan. And they say, look, you know, you've got a polling place right here at the base, 360 registered voters, 1,200 votes were counted. You know, like, clearly there's a problem. He says, look, clearly a result is the best possible outcome. But he says it so fast and no one reacts. It's like, I laughed out loud at that. Like, he just thinks a result is the best. Like, doesn't matter what the result is. We have a winner in this election. Of course it's problematic, but who cares? It's our result.
There's
like, as if there was any way to not get a result, you know, like.
Right. But there's another great scene too, where, so like Stanley McChrystal, he's got this entourage of, you know, 10 guys that are ultimately going to be his demise, just like McChrystal right. in the Rolling Stone article. And, you know, they're trying to get around Europe to do their, you know, not victory lap, but their PR tour to drum up support for whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish. And some travel problems have them, like, unable to get from A to B. And it's right. going to be a total mess. And it takes, like, these 10 guys using all their brain power for a significant amount of time to realize, well, couldn't we just get a bus? Because, like, it's Europe, and they really are about, you know, a 2-hour bus ride away from wherever it is they need to be. Clearly right. not as convenient as a flight, but I found that hilarious. Like, it took all of them to get there. And of course, then they end up getting the party bus with the booze and the strippers and the whatever. But that was a hilarious scene too.
What's up with Anthony Michael Hall in this movie? He looks like he ate someone else who fell on black days. Like, I was worried, has anyone seen Ally Sheedy? Like, maybe she and Molly Ringwald should just, like, send a tweet out to let everyone know they're okay. Anthony Michael Hall didn't consume them.
No, you're totally right. When I saw him in the opening credits, I kept waiting for him to appear, and it wasn't until the end that I was like, oh, it was that guy.
Then
I had to do a little Googling, and I found out that he's been in a lot of trouble, too. Like, he keeps getting arrested for punching his neighbors and stuff like that. He's not a good guy. We're going to have to tweet this at him later and maybe get punched.
Watch out. Yeah, maybe throw a punch.
Right.
What's up with the relationship with the wife? I also didn't understand there if we were supposed to... Are they a loving couple? Is it that he's an alien? Is she an alien as well? Is it just that they don't know each other, then they're strangers to one another after so many years in the military?
I think that it's that. I think that was trying to show the toll that military life takes on a marriage, because I do get the sense that he loved her. Like, I even thought that there were some tender moments exchanged in whatever transportation they were taking from one event to another, and that, you know, she looked at him with worried eyes when things were escalating at dinner or whatever. I really think that it was a loving marriage. I just think that it was a, you know, a marriage that probably was best not having happened, because God, what a sad state. Did you see the movie poster for it? Did you look it up at all, like on Wikipedia or anything? It looks like a Police Academy movie. The tagline on it is, "We're gonna liberate out of you," and it looks go to Wikipedia and look it up later. It looks like a Police Academy movie. It's just, if I saw that poster and then saw this movie, I'd be like, that is not at all what I was expecting.
No, but they could have gone there. Like, there was total potential.
Absolutely.
They had all the parts right at their disposal to make a funny, almost Police Academy style or
right.
Dr. Strangelove style satire about this war. Instead, it was like, ha ha, this is so tragic.
Yeah.
Ha ha, what's going on? Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah, right.
And that's it. What's up with the big cameo at the end? Like, were we supposed to go, hi-yo?
Now you're getting into the five questions already.
Oh, okay.
Buddy, are you ready for five questions?
Mike, I'm always ready for five questions.
All right, let's do it. Five listener-submitted questions. Thank you, listeners. Question number one. When you guys picked this movie, did you know that it was not a movie about the Marvel comic book character known as War Machine?
I did. Apparently, you did not.
I would have. Nothing would have surprised me when I pressed play. Yeah. So I'm sure you told me. I had forgotten. Question number two.
I will tell you briefly that in IMDb, under the trivia page for this movie, several people found it interesting that character of War Machine is played by Don Cheadle in the most recent films, who, of course, has also starred in several films with Brad Pitt.
That's fascinating.
People thought that was really interesting.
That's amazing. Wow. All right, question number two. We already talked about this. Can you tell me where Anthony Michael Hall has been so that I can avoid that place like the plague?
Apparently it's his neighbor's front yard.
In a barbecue that he got kicked out of. All right. Question number three. Glenn McMahon and his wife spent less than 30 days a year together for the last 8 years. You both travel for work. Does absence make the heart grow fonder?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do I get to answer too? You're in the hot seat. I think so.
You do, and I was expecting it, but you really had a delayed reaction. Like,
well, I didn't know if I got to answer.
When Christy hears this, she's going to be like, ooh, geez. Like, you really let that hang out there quite a while.
So 14 years from now, I'm in a lot of trouble. Question number four. Do you prefer your Russell Crowe roles uncredited?
Yes. Or not included.
Yeah, so he shows up at the end in kind of a humorous scene that replicates the opening scene of the movie, with Brad Pitt marching down the, you know, hallway of an airport with his crew behind him. And yeah, it's a totally uncredited role, but it's clearly Russell Crowe. And haha. By the way,
and I thought, were we supposed to laugh and be like, oh, Russell Crowe? It just seemed like such an obvious.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I rolled my eyes at it. I didn't get a chuckle out of me.
A bridge too far. Yeah. But yeah. Also, I thought that it was kind of weird because it reminded me of something that I jotted down initially in the movie, which is, do U.S. Army generals fly commercial? Because they're clearly at like a Delta terminal somewhere. And I have to imagine that they get a different escort to wherever they're going, right? Like, I don't know. It seemed weird to me. And final question. At what point does Loosely Based cross the line into we kinda changed the people's names?
I think that's a really important question. And I thought originally, when this movie was originally greenlit, that Brad Pitt was going to play Stanley McChrystal. And it was going to be more of a straight up drama about that episode and that part of the war and the troop surge. And so, you know, they changed it to avoid whether it's the risk of legal action from McChrystal or from anybody else. But then along the way, it seemed like it also morphed into kind of a satire or a comedy. So I thought it was really interesting. And you just wonder, is the threat of a lawsuit really that great, especially if it's already based on a book, which is based on an article written by a guy who was there? Like,
and they
how
actually,
much liberties could they have taken?
They actually, in the film, show the Rolling Stone cover. I remember the issue well. It's got, you know, a half-dressed Lady Gaga, but this is the Rolling Stone issue that published the article that 7 years ago then occupied the 24-hour cable news cycle for a week, right? Like, that was the story, because McChrystal was out. And you've got McChrystal, McMahon. They don't even change the name of the publication. They actually show the cover of the issue that broke the story. Like, if there was a threat of legal action, couldn't you still get there with just piecing those parts together? I don't know, but calling it loosely based seems a little weird. Though, as I mentioned earlier, I guess Brad Pitt doesn't come off quite as douchey as McChrystal did in that particular article. But that's five questions.
Thank you, listeners.
Buddy, final thoughts. Would you recommend that people go ahead and stream this for an hour and 45 minutes?
No, I would absolutely recommend that they go watch Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. From 1964, okay, with Peter Sellers in three different roles, Stanley Kubrick's masterpiece. There are so many people, I'm sure, who have never taken the time to see it. It's a great film. You'll love it. That's the movie to watch.
Yeah, I guess I feel like there were enough scenes in this movie that I found interesting enough to still say that I would tell somebody to go see it. I think I laughed out loud enough at maybe half a dozen parts that I thought it was still worth the time.
Great.
All right, so what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, we have the new DC Universe origin story of Wonder Woman, starring Gal Gadot and directed by Patty Jenkins.
Thanks for listening to the Spoiler Alert Podcast. Please visit us online at movieoutsiders.com, where you can see what films we'll be discussing next, comment on our recent episodes, suggest movies to review or topics to discuss, or submit questions for the 5 questions segment of the podcast. Stop by and visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/movieoutsiders, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @movieoutsiders. If you're a fan of the show, we'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes, Overcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast subscription service you use. We'll be back again next week with another episode, but until then, enjoy the movies.